The NCAA is changing right before our eyes. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. This week we'll talk preseason football and if Johnny Football could be the starter on opening day.
And then we'll talk with a member of the Ohio Machine. The professional lacrosse team is playing its first ever playoff game this weekend.
But first, the NCAA took a major hit last week in a federal court ruling in a case brought by former UCLA basketball standout Ed O'Bannon. The judge ruled that the NCAA violated antitrust laws when it said college athletes could not be compensated for the use of their names and their likeness. The judge sided with a group of current and former college football and basketball players led by O'Bannon, who say they're being used to help sell video games, TV broadcasts, and other content without being paid. It's a complicated ruling, a lot of confusion around it, so Thomas and I are going to do our best to sort it out. Thomas, as best as you can, explain this case a little more in depth, and I guess in layman terms, if you can. I laid it out a little bit right there, but that was the crux of it, right? That these people were mad they're being left out in the cold.
It's clear that the athletes have won here, and the NCAA has been profiting off their likeness forever. If you've ever played an NCAA video game, you log on your team, all of them are QB number two. But if you're playing Ohio State and you're playing as QB number two, you knew exactly who it was supposed to be. It looked like him.
Mike Doss at quarterback?
It looked like him. It had all the attributes.
Yeah, Terrell Pryor.
It was Terrell Pryor. And the NCAA has been doing this in their video games for years. They've been selling jerseys with a number two. And Terrell Pryor actually went on Seattle radio not too long ago and to speak out about this. And he said, when I was at Ohio State, I'd look around and I would see thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of number two jerseys, but I never once saw my name, but I knew who it was supposed to be. And the court ruled that it's unfair that athletes aren't getting some kind of recognition or compensation for these actions.
Does this open the floodgates for college players to get paid?
The NCAA still can cap what the college athletes can get. They can still cap it at $5,000, the max that a college athlete can get under a Pell Grant. But I think it's the first step in a 25-step process that college athletes can get paid for their likeness. Yes.
And so how are critics reacting to this? Because there are all kinds of critics, right? You can just imagine your crazy Uncle Larry who hates the idea of college athletes getting paid. What's their argument? What are they saying here?
Students first, athletes second. And that's what they've been saying forever. These are supposed to be student athletes, but we can just, honestly, with this federal court ruling, we can throw that out the window.
You really couldn't say it before then. I mean, not with a straight face. Not when ESPN is making billions of dollars off TV contracts. It's been a farce. It's been a hood and wink kind of thing for years now. Could this be precedent in future cases going forward? You kind of hinted at that, but this could be kind of the first crack in the dam of the NCAA?
I think it is. We've kind of seen the first part of it with the five super conferences starting to be able to write their own legislation, which again will probably get appealed by the NCAA, but this is kind of the fall of the NCAA, how much power they're going to have over dictating scholarships, stipends. They're still going to be the premier college athletic association, but I think their power is going to start to dwindle, and it's going to come down to conferences and schools and people that have student and athlete interest in mind a little bit better.
So they're at least not in the near future, the NCAA will not go away. You don't think this isn't a death nail in the what is the NCAA?
It's not going to be a death nail. There's going to be still NCAA regulations around. It's going to be tough for this O'Bannon ruling to make any difference on its own. There's a lot of steps down the road that need to happen, that we need to figure out how to administer trust funds for these smaller schools. Not every school is as loaded as Ohio State and can afford to pay all these players. Is it just football? Is it just basketball? What about men's tennis, women's rowing? There's all these varsity sports. There's Title IX implications to this. For every football player they play, they have to probably play a women's crew player because that's the equivalent at Ohio State. In a lot of schools, there's these women-only sports that don't play football. And that, according to Title IX, you have to pay and scholarship equally across genders. So there's a lot of implications of who's going to get more of a stipend. Is it cost of living? It's a giant mess, and honestly, we really don't know what's going to come out from it now, but it seems to be a win for athletes.
The Cincinnati Bengals are defending AFC North champions. They're the odds-on favorite again this year. The Baltimore Ravens, also in the AFC North, won the Super Bowl just 2 years ago. The Pittsburgh Steelers won their last Super Bowl not long before that. They've have some of the most Super Bowl wins in NFL history. But another team is still getting the most headlines.
We're still talking about the Cleveland Browns right now. I don't know if you want to call it a quarterback controversy, but it's a quarterback decision they have to make between veteran Brian Hoyer and Johnny Football, and there's a lot of interesting things in Cleveland. For more on this, we called up Rob Aller of the Columbus Dispatch to talk about that and a little bit about Ohio State football. Ohio State football announced this week they are dropping a home-and-home series with North Carolina, taking away a home game we'd play in Chapel Hill and a home game they play here. And they announced on Thursday, actually, that they are replacing it with a home game against Oregon State in 2018 and a home game against UNLV in 2017. What does this mean for Ohio State football? Obviously, it's better that there's two home games instead of one home game and one away game.
What it means for Ohio State is more money because they don't have to go to North Carolina. What it means for me personally is I got family in North Carolina, man. This hurts me personally. yeah, you know, anytime you can play at home and get the money, it's all about bottom line. And with everything, budgets increasing, I think they just wanted to have those home games. They have a minimum every year that they absolutely have to have in the horseshoe. And with the schedule change, the 9-game schedule versus the 8, they had to make this move.
Looking at future schedules, it's a stark difference between, say, the 2010-2011 season where they played Ohio and Troy and a bunch of these MAC schools and lower-tier schools. I'm looking at the 2018 schedule, and like I said, they've got Oregon State. They open with a conference game against Rutgers. They've got TCU, and they've got an open slot. They'll probably put a MAC-type team in that slot, but just a big difference in looking at the future schedules between what we've seen in the past.
It'd be interesting to know for sure if this has to do with the college football playoff, you know, strength of schedule, perception, if nothing else. I mean, I'm not so sure, you know, a team out west, you know, whether an Oregon State is better than the best MAC team. But kind of nationally, I think an Oregon State has more cachet among those who are going to be on the college football, you know, committee that picks the four teams in the playoff. Oregon State just has, you know, has a bigger upside, a bigger name national than, say, Kent State or Bowling Green. So I think that's part of it. I think it's kind of a perception thing. Even though, again, they may not be any better, they seem like they're better for that committee. I think that'd be a big part of it.
They're in a Power 5 conference, and a win against Oregon State early. Oregon State always seems to be able to beat Oregon or Stanford at the end of the year for some reason. So that probably plays into it a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, I also think that Urban Meyer, I believe, has a pretty good relationship with the Oregon State coach. And I just think they want to get away from the smaller in-state schools, which I think is a mixed bag because on one hand, I wrote recently, this idea of now with the Power Five, maybe there should be this mandate that you can only play Power Five conference schools, which would be kind of cool for fans because just usually, again, bigger names seems a little more big time, mm-hmm. Even if it's not. But the other deal is that I just think that the negative is that you're not keeping that money in state, you know, which has always been a big deal, like whether you have an Ohio or a Kent. This mm-hmm. year they are with Kent. So, you know, it's kind of a trade-off. I think ultimately it's about getting into that 4-game playoff and impressing the committee, the selection committee.
Well, Rob, if it does make you feel better, I have family in Oregon, and my wife has family out in Nevada, so we'll be able to talk some trash that way, hopefully. We're gonna switch now to a little NFL talk. Browns rookie quarterback Johnny Manziel, he had a pretty good first game against the Lions. I don't think he played as great as some pundits led us to believe, but he did play fairly well. Incumbent veteran Brian Hoyer did not play quite as well, but not that poorly either. Is it still Hoyer's job to lose, like a lot of people thought, since he was the incumbent and had some success last year? Or do you think Johnny Football is really poised to take this job?
I think it's pretty neck and neck now, and whenever that's the case, you're going to go with the rookie, the high-priced guy, that you know, the national headline guy. It was a little interesting that, you know, Johnny's not starting the next game, but then there's also the report that he was late to a meeting. And it's classic because it was handled internally by the team, but then it's released or Valley, so the whole world knows now that Johnny was late to a meeting. So that may have something to do with why he's not starting, even though they said that's probably not the case. I got to believe it is the case a little bit that he's not starting the game. So I think it's probably neck and neck, and Manziel a little bit. Johnny Football still kind of misses receivers downfield. I mean, that would be the one glitch in his game. I think the other day he took off and got the first down running, but he had a wide open receiver and didn't even see him or chose not to throw to him. So, you know, I mean, it's expected. He's a rookie, and few guys come in right away and just are, you know, looking great, 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 and eventually he'll be the guy.
Yeah, higher ceiling as well for Johnny Manziel. Is there anything else that jumped out with you in regard to the Browns? I don't know how much of the first game you're able to watch, but anything else you're really interested in regarding the Browns at this point?
Well, it's more just, again, I think, you know, initially, Mike Pettine, you know, most people didn't know how to pronounce his name. And now he's winning me over. Maybe it's just a tough talk. Maybe he just looks good. But I think he's got a process and seems to be saying and doing the right things. Seems like a Cleveland guy, you know, sort of the blue-collar cliche of just tough and, you know, almost like a Steelers. I mean, it seems like he'd fit better as well with the Steelers. I just like the attitude, and I think that they finally have a guy who's just not a touchy-feely type, who maybe they've had with Chud and, you know, players coach. A guy who grew up there, it sort of fits the MO of what you think Cleveland sports should be. So more than anything, it's a mindset, I'd say. I still don't know if I see this team being any better 500. I'd be surprised if they got to 500, honestly, but I like where they're headed.
Jumping down to Cincinnati, Andy Dalton has his new contract, one of the higher paid quarterbacks in the NFL. How are the Bengals poised for this season? They're obviously always in a tough division with the Steelers and the Ravens and the Browns. How are the Bengals going to fare after going to the playoffs the last 2 years and being one and done?
Well, it's getting over that hump, and that's the million-dollar question, right, with Andy Dalton. I mean, here's a guy that has really looked good in the regular season, and he gets in the playoffs. I believe he's 0-3, and he just had a terrible playoff game last year, San Diego, with, I believe, three interceptions, maybe a fumble. I may have that wrong, but he just has not performed in the clutch when he needs to. Now, is that just a coincidence? We shall see. I mean, they gave him the huge contract, not so much based on anything other than, you know, he's probably an above-average quarterback, and that's what the market's dictating now. It's, you know, it's better to take a guy who you know can win than, you know, a guy that's just, you know, you're just not sure about.
Yeah, and Brian Hoyer or Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, exactly. You're pretty sure about Dalton regular season. You're sure that he can get you there. Because he's done it. So I just don't know, you know, if he has that between the ears ability is really what it comes down to. Pressure, thinking quickly. Once the game amps up, even in the playoffs, it gets a little faster and they have time to prepare a little more maybe, and really tendencies. Can he handle it? So they're rolling the dice that he can.
We've been talking Buckeye Browns and Bengals football with Rob Aller from the Columbus Dispatch. Rob, thanks as always.
Thanks, Chad.
The NFL is by far America's most favorite sports league, gets the most headlines. Another league, another team especially, could be getting headlines this weekend, especially in Delaware, just north of Columbus, the Ohio Machine.
That's right, the professional lacrosse team here in Columbus, Ohio, the Ohio Machine. They play at Ohio Wesleyan, and they're actually playing their first ever playoff game this weekend in Rochester. To talk about the team and to talk about their playoff chances, we called Eric O'Brien, a former Ohio State athlete and current member of the Ohio Machine.
Eric O'Brien, welcome to After the Score.
Hey, guys. It's great to be here.
So the Machine won two games in each of the team's first 2 years, then won eight this year. What exactly happened? Why that big leap?
Well, we started off on a similar trend. You know, we won the first game, then we followed up with a couple losses. I think it was just about chemistry and the team coming together and the consistent roster that coach kept going for us. You know, the 19 guys meshed well. We found the chemistry that equaled the equation to win games, and you know, everyone's contributing as far as, you know, from goalie all the way to attack. And we put a five-game win streak together, which has actually put us in the playoffs this weekend against Rochester.
Your league is 15 years old. The Machine are three years old, but I don't think a lot of casual sports fans know much about it. Make an elevator pitch, if you will, about your league and why people should watch outdoor lacrosse.
Well, it's a mix of NHL hockey. You got the mix of the Crew and the mix of NBA basketball. I mean, it's the fastest game on 2 feet. We hit just as hard as the NFL players, but we technically have a weapon in our hands too, which we're allowed to hit each other with as hard as possible. You're going to see about 30 goals a game, high action, and the 5,000 people that we drew to our last home game, actually, it was a great venue. I mean, everyone was excited. We've retained and kept growing from a fan standpoint. So
I admittedly do not know a single thing about lacrosse. You can hit people with a stick. It's just like warfare out there.
As long as it's not in the head, yeah. I mean, guys are walking out with bruises, bumps everywhere, all over their body. So,
well, yeah.
In Major League Lacrosse, it's legal.
It's like Mad Max out there.
Yeah.
Lacrosse, I think, is traditionally seen as kind of an elitist sport, if you will. It's really popular in Ivy League schools and on the East Coast. But that's changing, right? It's becoming more widely available, more accessible to inner-city kids and the like.
Yes, yeah. We have a club here in town in Columbus. We work with the Wyland Park kids called Resolute Lacrosse. And so inner-city's catching on. It's catching on, you know, down south in Florida and the West Coast, too. You got schools like USC, Cal, and a couple other big universities looking to potentially go varsity, too. So it's going to be a nationwide sport within the next 10 to 12 years.
And you're able to make a living doing it?
For the most part, yes. I do have a full-time job, too. I own a company called Mosaic Employee Benefits. Do a lot of financial planning gigs on the side. So, but, yeah, it keeps me comfortable. It's a nice little vacation fun.
You played lacrosse for Ohio State, correct?
Correct.
What's the difference between college lacrosse that I'm sure a lot of people have seen casually, a lot of that's on ESPN often, and Major League lacrosse?
You know, my first game, my transition from college to pro out in San Francisco when I got picked up was definitely the speed of the game. You're in college, you're managed by your coach. You follow the offense and you follow the defense. You kind of know where the slide's coming from, and there's no shot clock, so you're not in any hurry. So the game's a little bit slower in college, whereas you have a 60-second shot clock, you know, very similar to NBA basketball and pro lacrosse, and you're working at a much faster pace. You're working with high-profile athletes all around, and you know, it's you have to act on a second.
I talked about how lacrosse has traditionally been seen as kind of an elitist sport. What else might people misunderstand or not know about lacrosse?
What might they misunderstand? That's a tough one there. I mean, it's similar to soccer. You have your attack, midfield, and defense. Midfield can utilize the whole field. And, you know, so I guess the rules compile of a lot of, you know, bring in three or four different sports there, you know, which makes it high action packed. You know, there's eight teams in the league right now. There's 3,000 players, you know, vowing for, you know, 130 spots each weekend. And it's down to four teams now, so even less than that. Tough question to answer there.
I mean, a lot of people probably see you guys running and subbing on the fly, defense and offense coming off. Mm-hmm. In Major League Lacrosse, there's the 2-point line. In college, mm-hmm. there's not the 2-point line.
Correct.
It's probably just a misunderstanding of rules. There's nothing else like it in sports. Unless you go to a couple of lacrosse games, you're not going to fully understand what's going on. And I think that frustrates a lot of people.
Yes, completely. You need to sit by a lacrosse-educated fan to really understand the game. So once we get more exposure on TV, you know, and as the youth game grows and more parents get acclimated to the game watching their kids play, you know, that'll help the pro scene grow a little bit too and draw more fans.
You said you have your first playoff game against Rochester. Talk about your chances against them and what you guys expect to do in the playoffs this year.
Our chances are very good. We're 2-0 against them this season. Let's see here. It's a 7-goal spread in those two games. We beat them 18-13, 17-15. And we've been very confident, whether it's the game was here or there. And, you know, we're all friends after the game, enemies during the game. But out in Rochester 2 weeks ago when we played them, they made it apparent that if they have to play someone in the playoffs, they don't want to play us. So, you know, we're going to go in sky high to this game, and I think they're coming in a little bit scared.
A lot of trash talking in Major League Lacrosse?
Oh, yes, during the games big time. Mm-hmm.
We've done some reporting on concussions here on our podcast, and it's obviously a point of discussion in the NFL and all other sports. Lacrosse, too, high school lacrosse especially, where there's some differences in equipment between boys lacrosse and girls lacrosse. How big of an issue is it in Major League Lacrosse?
Yeah, you're going to see, you know, the kids in high school are protected much more, and same as in college, too. And that's why the rules are a little less lenient in Major League Lacrosse, because you have pros, guys who understand how to hit, how to protect themselves a little bit better than you do at the younger levels. So in Major League Lacrosse, actually, I can't think of one concussion incident this year on my team. You know, we've had a wrist and a couple, you know, ankles, but that's about it. Yeah, it's you're just dealing with high profile athletes in the Major League Lacrosse, so it's really not an issue for us.
Eric O'Brien is a midfielder for the Ohio Machine. They play their home games at Ohio Wesleyan University in Delaware, and they play their first ever playoff game in Rochester this weekend. Eric, thanks again for joining us.
Yes, appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. You can always find the show using the WOSU Public Media mobile app and on iTunes.
You can talk to us on Twitter @AfterTheScore. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.